Yeah.
Do you have a wine carry from that you were accumulating from
Oh yeah, they're right here.
Let's we're now into private session, and Roy, if you'll just kind of lead off on that, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Bob, you should have a copy in your email.
So, most of you know
what they're talking about.
The issue we've had with Mr. James about the records that he has being a CPA for the district. He also had additional records in addition to whatever financial work he was doing. And I don't know if it's worth going back over the whole history of that. Everybody knows what that is.
Yeah.
The last comment was from the board that they wanted us to send a letter to him, giving him a certain date that he had to respond by or do something by, or else they would take the next action. And so in your package, you can see that there's a letter from him, dated June 4th, 2018. And I don't know if you want to spend some time looking at that. Basically, he commented the fact that we had indicated that maybe he was a board member. We just looked through the sparse minutes that we had. We saw he was at the meetings, assumed that he might have been, but he indicates that he strictly was a CPA. So our concern is, of course, one, he still has the public records. He's refusing to give those up. I've talked to Blake at length about this, and Blake, of course, has sent the notice to him. And we're at a point, as I've talked with the chairman, about what do we do beyond, at this point, what do we do? Do we chase him down, take him to court, sue him? He still refuses to give up the public documents, and so we say, does he have anything that's critical for the district? Are they critical documents? Are they the only documents? And there's no question they are, because they are the only documents, the originals that he has, because we have some of those that Kerry actually picked up and hauled off almost against this guy's will. And there's all kinds of original documents in there that are beyond just financials. He was housing most of the documents because they were having meetings at his house. We also had an incident where Jamie wanted some information related to impact fees. And so she came asking if there were impact fees that were paid, and we didn't have the information. So she went to him, to Mr. James. He produces all kinds of information for her. Even after he said he didn't have anything, she brought that back to us, unfortunately. It's just more evidence that it's there.
So why doesn't he want to give it to us?
I don't know if it's whether he thinks there's value, he should be paid for what he has, and we can buy it from him. I don't know if it's that, or if he's protecting something that possibly is shady. He had actually made the comment to Kerry that there was no question that there were criminal, or as he would put it, criminal things going on that he didn't want to talk about.
Really?
So, but that's just Kerry.
That's a great reason to withhold documents.
So, you know, you get to at this point, there's no question there's documents. So we have plenty of original documents, and Kerry's a good witness to that. She only got a piece of those. After him packing up several different boxes, she got one box of them full of documents. That's of about five equal boxes that are additional out there. As I talked to the chairman about what do we do, do we go after this guy? Blake says we could take his license. We could, you know, basically ruin his life. Do we want to do that, or do we just say, look, it's not worth chasing after?
I actually do have a little bit of information on this now, reading this letter.
Uh-huh.
There was a woman named Angie Elam that was basically doing Kerry's job prior to the county taking over. I don't know what happened with her, but she was also, you know, basically an admin assistant for us.
Uh-huh.
There were records kept in that office where my office is. There were two filing cabinets, and someone did come pick those up probably in 2015 or 16.
Those went down to the county.
They went down to the county?
And I think we have those, but we looked through them. I dug through those files last week in depth. I found good stuff, but But there's like little tiny files full of stuff. This guy has boxes full of stuff.
Okay.
It's just like, I mean, like 8 inches thick of documents. And we have little tiny files with one or two letters in them. I'm thinking it had to have been more than this.
Yeah.
It has to be.
And so, you know.
Anyway, I don't know.
I mean.
What do we do?
For me, Roy, and we've had this discussion, it's beyond inappropriate for somebody that has a professional license, you know, or an individual, I suppose, to withhold public records in either an extortion attempt or in a obstruction of justice scenario, I suppose. There's a lot of important things that we haven't really got an understanding on as a district historically. I mean, how did that sewer lease happen? I mean, that's you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's incumbent upon us, I believe, to aggressively identify district property and maintain district property and to go after people that are violating the law. I mean, I had suggested, and of course I'm not an attorney, that he be asked to fill out an affidavit in which, do you have additional records? Do you not have additional records? Is this a sort of ethical violation for a CPA to withhold clients' records or withhold records from previous clients when they're successor is demanding them, particularly at public utility? Send a letter to the licensing authorities and ask that sort of ethical question. This guy is completely off base in somehow passing information to Jamie and withholding information from us. It's bullshit. Okay? And we shouldn't tolerate it.
Pardon me. Can we use the word bovine feces?
Yes.
President? Thank you.
Don't call me a lady.
Yeah, and you know, and you brought up an important point, Bob, and that is the fact that even though we've told him that they are protected documents under the Government Records Management Act, he still just prints them off and gives them to Mr. Moyal. He prints them off and gives them to other people, and they contain everybody's stuff up on the mountain. I don't know how private or public the stuff is he's giving out, but I don't think he has the authority to be giving out public information.
Yeah. My board, I'm going to... It's my opinion that if this guy now has done it twice, we don't know again if he's, to our knowledge, he's done it twice. It could be even more than that. He's proven that he does have additional documents since he's seen and acknowledged our demand. In this particular case, you teach people how to treat you. And I think he's just like, well, they're not going to do anything, big deal. So that's what it is. So
shake Blake on him. Go Hoop. Professor, no, seriously. I mean, who knows what information is in there that would be critical if we really got in a bind with something, an easement or that sewer lease. Who knows what else is going on
right. That
we don't know about it.
Yep.
Enough already of this hide-and-seek Easter egg hunt nonsense.
Yeah, is there, I mean, this Government Records Act, is there, can we have the district attorney go after him or send him a threatening letter? I mean, that would be both inexpensive.
Yeah, that's under the state operates that division, and state archives is that division. The state should, I actually went to them, suggested that they do that, and they didn't do anything. So I got a hold of the special districts, trustee or director, and he is actually going to go talk to him too and say, look, you need to be responding to this district. You have problems. It's your responsibility to be dealing with these records. Mm-hmm. And so, but it's a great suggestion. We need that backup.
We could try. And
I think it's worth pursuing, yeah. Yeah. But I guess we're at a point where, for me, I'm fine doing that, and I think we need to do something. I don't want this guy to just basically take the public records and abuse them. By the law, and so there's stuff there we need. He produced information about who paid impact fees. We don't have that. That's just critical for the poor people up there who may have funded those things, and we have no proof, but he does. That's crazy.
Well, that's going to lead into...
No, it's beyond. It's an unethical posture for an accountant to take. There's specialty board repercussions when you do stuff like that.
Yeah, so if we just need authorization, I guess, to go ahead and do that, and we'll...
Go for it.
Chase after him. That was my conversation with Blake, because he said, what do you guys give me direction, and we'll go.
We okay for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. guess we're on pause for a minute or something.
Anybody want some?
Sure. What about, I love it, I'll talk about the summit thing. We got a second, I guess we can.
Yeah, we can.
It's another problem that's out there.
Yeah.
Actually, before we move on, I just want to make sure I have the right instructions to give to Blake, because there were a couple routes that we could take with Mr. James. There's like his licensing. We could sit the Department of Professional Licensing on him, and they would open up an investigation and possibly discipline him for not giving his client, supposedly we were his client, their records when we requested. And then there's also the separate issue of he has public records that apparently are the only government record, the copies of the government records that exist, so he's kind of maintaining government records even though he's not a government entity, which is inappropriate. So there are different kind of avenues we could go. Yeah. Is there a preference from the board, like which avenue you want us to take?
Is there a reason you have to choose?
I want to take all avenues simultaneously.
I think he's right.
Then we will do that. Point. We'll just evaluate all the avenues that are, you know, viable and follow them.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Good part.
So, sent the email to Greg that you were shared on the draft that was sent as drafted. I spent 2 hours
<Not bad. laughs>
The crux of it really comes down to let's start at the beginning. So he believes that the draft and the intent of the clause in that agreement between SMHG and Powder Mountain Water Sewer was to prohibit any subdivision getting the excess water before SMHG had the right of first refusal for it. He said it was, and that was the intent. Anybody who was there would know that was the intent. We should draft a clarifying amendment to that clause and clarify it. And I kept telling him, I said, that's fine, and it protects you in the future, but if, I think it's a coin toss whether intent trumps the written language in the agreement if Moyal brings suit against it.
Yeah.
And the district doesn't want to, be in a position where we're basically enticing him to sue us because, we believe with the 30 connections that Powder Ridge, the 60 connections at Sundown, that there's really not going to be any excess water anyway to serve him. Then it becomes an issue if there is excess water. Greg says, okay, well, this is not an unforeseen circumstance with someone bringing forward an existing commitment. This is someone asking for 10 new connections. How can that jump in line in front of the agreement that we already have where we get first right of refusal on excess water? So, which I think
is a great question.
Which I think is his valid, he has a valid point on that one. So,
yeah, I agree. When we were reviewing this with Rachel, that was actually my concern about that one issue. She reviewed it, and the opinion that she gave was that, as you can tell, it appeared that he could be given approval because of he was a, I don't know how she puts it, unforeseen or a previous business arrangement or something. I wish I could remember the term right now. And so we followed that direction from her.
Yep.
And so we issued that based on her direction that she was comfortable with it, that a will serve letter could be given based on that. And so we've issued that and felt okay. But based on the attorney opinion and written information in the contract, we just leaned on that and said, this is what we have to go with. I know in that meeting we just had this recently, Ann said that was not the intent of the agreement, and I didn't say too much. She says, well, we could probably get together and file some motion to say this was the intent of both parties. And I said, I don't know what those intents were, but I would base my, I didn't have a fight in it. I would base my decision on what's best for the district, what's written, and what's in our agreements. And after the meeting, and county caught me on this today, they said, well, we were uncomfortable with the wording we heard, that why don't we just get together and talk about the intent and file some motion to change the agreement. And I, we'll have to look at it. But as I walked out of the meeting, again, because this is a it's a closed meeting here, she just said, truthfully, Roy, she said, that was an F up. I made a big mistake. And no, I said, well,
Rachel did?
No. And I said, I understand what happened. I said, I was upset. I kind of understood that a little bit from Rachel, and I got upset at her over it. But I said, the fact is, we're basing our decision on what's in the documents, okay. And she provided that opinion. And she says, why don't we just file something? I said, Ann, that's collusion. I want no part of it. Yeah. Absolutely no part
but,
of it.
But I think Greg's point that how can he have a right before our stated first right of refusal? Because I think you can make a really strong argument that is not an unforeseen circumstance. That's just someone coming up wanting to subdivide land. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Single family homes, I think is the way Rachel put it.
Yeah, but this isn't a single family home. This is someone taking one lot that has one connection associated with it and wanting to subdivide it into 11 lots and create additional connections. I don't think that's an unforeseen circumstance, and he shouldn't have the right then to jump in front of our first right of refusal, I guess is, and I think that
I'm sympathetic with Greg's point on the point that Mark's identifying. However, I must say that agreement for the overage, and I might add the transfer of that mission critical easement at COVID, was a laboriously negotiated document, okay? And to somehow, after the fact, for an attorney to say, oh, it was a mistake, I basically didn't read my own document carefully enough, okay? That's not our problem at this point. The plain English interpretation of that does allow us to give it to people like Powder Ridge and the guy at Sundown or whatever,
and
whether or not they should be bumped ahead of Myoker in front of Summit or whatever. Those are the kind of decisions we're going to have to make. But I absolutely am opposed to any sort of additional clarification of what intent was, because I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, if we had made sort of a similar screw-up in terms of plain English, I'm not so sure that we would be given an opportunity to take another swing at the ball.
Bob, I support you, and I'm making the same argument internally within our company, and that's...
Yes.
I think more than anything, it's just opening us up to, a collusion claim, or, at the very least, it's enticing him to sue, because he and his, as an investor, and if he does have an attorney, they're working off of a written document without knowledge of the intent or the discussions that took place.
Precisely, Mark.
But I think, Greg does have a really valid claim that this isn't an unforeseen.
At the risk of trying to being perhaps flippant, this was targeted for additional developers. I mean, we knew that.
Yep.
And there was conversations that it was an attempt to limit additional development up on the hill and to tighten up that water supply. And it was a failed attempt ultimately, just some sloppy legal work. That's how I see it.
Kerry's trying to find a document that we found and Mike even referred to back in 2015, and I bet that would have probably what?
That back in 2016, when he came to the board and asked for approval back then, in a letter, in board meeting for 11, and it got carried on and carried on and carried on until now. So he approached the board back in 2016 and asked for
approval. So before our agreement.
Yes, it was before the agreement.
He brought the issue up, and that's where he's been fighting over this thing. It's like, I approached you, you just put me off.
He put me off. He came to board meeting, so it's in the meeting minutes.
So then Greg's other point, there's going to be multiple here, so just kind of be prepared for this. Mm-hmm. His other point is he came prior to any attempt by Mike Moyle to buy that land to ask the district whether there were additional connections available for that.
Really?
And whether it could be subdivided, and he was told, no, there's one connection and that's it. And that's why he didn't buy it. So
I was wondering why he didn't go after that. Yeah. I was thinking that's why.
I think that might have been after Mike bought, but those historical references always become fuzzy.
Yeah, so you know, unless he can produce proof of that, I don't know how much claim there is there, but let's move away from that. Let's move to Sundown though. So and this is where I was alluding to in the public session about standby fees. Because I told him, you know, Sundown and Powder Ridge both have connections that are available to them, and his immediate fire off was that they've been paying standby fees. And if they haven't, how can they still have connections?
So what I thought too, as we looked at it, and
my question,
we failed to recognize it and bill properly. Would be
I think that's probably the problem, that's
what happened with Mike.
Well, I looked at our documentation, yeah. and it appeared that our board had told them they did not have the right to develop, from our understanding of it. So I brought that up with the Sundown's attorney. Boy, he jumped right down my throat. He said, I do have approval. We've had it, and the county's going to produce that.
Yeah.
And the county did. They came back and said, yeah, he's always had the right. It's like, that would have been nice to know. It's worth probably a few hundred thousand dollars to the district.
Right. So then, you know, Greg's question is, now can we go back and bill them for those standby fees? And if they don't pay those, do they lose those connections?
We are actually in the process of taking care of that.
Greg's right again.
Yeah,
I believe that's correct. Now
we can go back 4 years.
Yeah.
And so we've told him that, and we told him. He said that you understand if you don't come up with those standby fees, that you'll lose all of those rights. And they said, yeah, we do, and we'll pay them. We're like, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And now Sundown or Powder Ridge has been a little bit more difficult to deal with because the actual owner and the homeowners association have been approaching us differently. We've been trying to get hold of the actual owner. The homeowners association seemed to indicate that they had some right to go in and redevelop those or develop them. I don't know what that means.
Well, there's two parcels there, at least two. One is the units that are already approved and have connections,
right,
assuming they pay the back.
Well, no, they already have a will serve letter for that.
Okay.
That was done prior to us, or they wouldn't have been able to put what they've already done anyway, because I asked Rhonda about that. They already have the will serve for 30 connections.
Okay, an additional 30.
No, just the 30.
Just 30.
So that for that one particular, what is it, phase three?
Yeah.
The one that hasn't been built.
The one that hasn't been built.
But shouldn't they be still paying standby fees on this?
Yes, okay. And we are going after, but I'm just saying that the will serve has already been issued, so that's out of the hands.
Okay.
That's kind of stuff we're trying to figure out, and maybe it's worth having Greg talk to him, because maybe both of these developers may give it all up to somebody and just don't want to pursue it. They just want to know what value they had in all of this.
Yeah. So then there's another 11-acre parcel behind that, as far as we know, doesn't have any commitments to it or density associated with it as far as development.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Greg's concern is because Mike's tried to buy that.
Mm-hmm. He still is.
And
he's still close today.
Yeah. And if he buys that, will the same thing happen? Will he then be allowed to subdivide that and create more?
Yeah, he asked me, and I just told him I would comment on it.
Okay.
But yeah, and unfortunately, I think at some point, I think the district needs to deal with all of those additional parcels that are out there, because I think there's another one somewhere along the roadway that's, I think that's a sliver right there by Powder Ridge, isn't there?
Not that I...
Mike was talking about another one that was...
There's another one
somebody's
got.
Closer to the top of the hill, right, just above what he's wanting to develop.
No, that's ours. He's probably talking about the 11 acres that's...
There's another one.
Weaver State has a lot that we gave them, but they won't ever sell that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we're trying to trade them for it for another parcel, because what happened with that is at some point they were given that parcel to build an observatory for their astronomy department, and they never did. And we did, I mean, we had an independent appraisal done because there's no density associated with it, so there's really no value to that lot.
Mm-hmm.
So the value of it came back at like $72,000 or something, and we made them an offer of fair market value, and they're assuming because of its location that it is worth way more than that. And they said, well, we're not going to sell it to you for $72,000. And we said, okay, well, you know.
And be careful. I know Mike's really pushing to try and get a hold of that thing. So
yeah.
I'll look into it.
Yeah.
Well, that's where most of the parcels are at that are untouched. The other one that's really out there that maybe might be interested in is that Alita, when I talked to her, was interested in that one piece that's up for sale down the going down the canyon.
Well, that's because her sister owns it.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
They were talking about developing it and wondering if it was close to one of the wells. And I said, well, you have water rights that you could use or something, you know.
Yeah.
She sounded like she might have. I guess they might have still more in the family.
Who knows what they've got.
And we'd be close enough to the sewer. It'd probably be seven units. That might not be a big issue for us, but the water.
The slopes are going to be the killer there. I don't think they have enough flat land that they could develop more than one or two units there.
Yeah.
And then getting access to the state highway, I don't know if they'd ever get that either.
Mm-hmm. And she's going to try and claim free connections that she gets from Alita somehow on that parcel.
Yeah, exactly.
No, seriously, she is.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So what is our policy? I mean, this well comes in, and the development agreement, which I've never seen, but I was told expires 18 months after it was signed.
After the well certified.
Okay.
So after the well certified, we have 18 months to pay for and consume any excess water. And consuming it's going to be the big problem. And that's what I keep trying to explain to Greg, because I'm like, you know, how are you going to consume it when you've only got, in the 18 months trailing this well being certified, we may have 20 units that are online. So, you know, that's what, 10 GPM. So, you know, if there's more than 10 GPM excess, we're not going to have any way to consume this water. So
that's my question about, and then what? Then
well, I guess there's one more variable in there, and that's the economy. We're all hoping everything's going to work out fine, and everybody's going to build and buy and everything else. This all may stop for several years, and then what?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the bond markets right now, they're saying recession in the next 18 to 24 months, assuming what Trump's doing doesn't bring it on sooner.
just point of information, everything I've seen from Ken Gardner and some of the other things, not a recession, an adjustment. And that's and the difference is, when we went through the, sorry to get so technical, but when we went through the recession, so to speak, 6, 7, 8 in that time period, we had plenty of labor, especially in the building and construction. We don't have that now.
Right.
So that's you're paying premium plus, because everybody who's doing anything is so busy. And so they anticipate a correction, not much.
Okay.
I've heard that now two different times, one from Zions Bank and one from Ken Gardner.
A correction
in the market.
In
the market. So your homes will probably level off or maybe go down just slightly in value, but then start to climb again after a period of time.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess building could keep going, but. But I think Don mentioned this and pretty wisely, but we're up meeting with Paul and I were meeting with him, and he said that for Greg, he understands his frustration with it because he would have liked to have that as the entrance way to his development. And we're fine. As a district, I told Don, I said, it doesn't matter. I mean, we'd just like to see the development happen somehow.
Yeah.
We don't want to get caught sideways in the middle of all these other negotiations. But really, if they're not part of your market and what you're doing, the condos are going to bring added value to the ski resort and also the other homes if and when they're built. I guess you just have to make sure they have some high quality houses being built there, or other people, decent people buying them that you feel like would really bring a nice compliment to your development too, but they're outside of your development.
My Al is a quality builder.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Greg's big concern. I mean, is that we've worked really hard to get values to, you know, $900 to $1,000 a square foot, and
Mike's making noise that he's going to be selling somewhere around 5 and it's going to erode the value on everybody's property up there, not just ours.
Now, I don't know if can the county help control some of that.
I don't think so. I mean, they don't have, it's free market. They can't control pricing of homes.
Maybe just based on zoning.
You know, there's a huge discrepancy there, but there's always been a market for Pintos and for Cadillacs.
True.
Greg doesn't
like it. I'm selling my Pinto right now.
I'm not sure it'll go. I mean, maybe Greg will push back enough to want to challenge it in court. I always thought in my mind that it may come down to that.
Yeah,
it's a very sensitive issue with two guys that are very sensitive, and they have enough money to challenge it.
Yeah,
I don't think he does either. He called today and said, "I need another letter that's more firm." So I'm not going to give you anything else. I forget it.
Yeah.
He's just trying, hoping for a will serve letter or something, you know. I mean, I'm going to go. He was going today to actually get his sign all the final documents on it. I said, be careful.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you've got something pretty solid, Mike.
So has anybody seen the plans for what's happening at Sundown, or they haven't submitted yet?
No, they're going to utilize basically the same plans that the county has, but they're going to modernize the buildings.
Are they utilizing that, whatever it was, 6 acres that was they well, bought that sure. someone bought mm-hmm. from Zion, or is it on the land that they already had that's behind?
No, it's
it?
up above,
right up against the road.
Okay,
that's so a steep slope. I guess they'll just go right on the hillside and go straight up.
Against your road, the road.
The one that's going makes a switchback.
Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. just below Powder West.
It's in. It's at 6 acres. It was for sale with Zion. They must have bought that. So.
Yeah, and then they have like 12 more units that they could build down below where they already have built.
Yeah.
So they were indicating that they were going to change the look to a more modern style, so they look nice and get away from that old looking style, and also go to modern building standards. Structurally.
Yeah, I mean that they'll have to just because of the buildings or the, what is it, the design standards that the county put in place for up there. So,
mm-hmm.
okay. So they're going to move away from the 2x3s that currently form the Sundown condo.
Yeah. And it might be nice
they
to talk to them, encourage them.
I think they're like 1x2.
I think.
All right.
Yep.
Any more discussion here in our closed session?
I think there's just the last issue about Eden Heights.
Can I ask one last question about that before we end? Sorry.
No, you're great.
So do we have a strategy for it's 18 months from now? The development, you know, 18 months from whenever the well is done, the development agreement has expired. People want water. Do we... I mean, we just created our rules and regulations and all that stuff. I mean, we should probably have a plan.
So we're back to that same thing, wait for the baby to be born. We don't know what that automatic or something?
Could very well be.
If the well doesn't if the well doesn't produce enough, depending what that volume is, if it's not up to even what the Powder West needs, and we don't have anything, but if it produces by far more, which they're all saying it will, then we have excess water maybe even for Summit.
Okay. But so 4 months from now we should have that discussion.
Yeah, I think even in 45 days from now we're going to know a lot more.
Okay.
And we'll start making some choices on that. But I just wish that things were different. Wish the agreement was different. I would have been fine if a Summit got it all. I don't care, but it would have been not easier. Maybe it is. Maybe we just need to look at that a little harder and see what that says.
Well, I think the key is to look at when Mike made his initial inquiry, and then we have to make a determination whether that initial inquiry puts him in place ahead of us, or whether it comes down to, you know, a signed submission, and whether that puts him in the queue, and whether that's ahead of us or not. I mean, that's really it.
Yeah. So we'll kind of put all those documents together in that timeline, and then I think it's good for the board to really understand. We'll get them out to you, unless you'd be reading those and seeing what happened, who said what.
Yeah.
Get your minds wrapped around it all, because it becomes a real issue. You want to know it for sure.
So I get that you guys both have to deal with it, you because of Greg, but as a practical matter, right, mm-hmm. I mean, no one's going to be, if Mike moves as fast as he possibly can, he might be trying to put something in the ground by the time the development agreements expire. expired. Mm-hmm. We expect we'll have water. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we may not, but we expect. It seems like no matter what,
it's ways out.
It's good.
He knows he's 2 years out before he gets to do much of anything.
But for Greg to contest it, yeah. I mean, he's going to contest what he can't consume the excess capacity, in the 18 months. So, Mike, I mean, as much as he may want Mike to die, it seems like he's going to be wasting, not that he won't, but he'll be wasting time and effort.
Yeah,
and I think the frustrating part is what Mark said. Unfortunately, they're trying to build a pristine development, and they can't control what's happening with the front door.
Yeah,
that other stuff.
But he wasn't aware of Sundown either, and that really kind of set him off. So that was the discussion about standby fees.
And I was actually surprised because I really didn't think anything was going to happen with it. But when the county just came back and sent us a letter or an email and said, yeah, they didn't have approval, I was shocked. That was a long time ago.
Right.
So we'll go after the standby fees, and if they can't pay them, then we'll see if we can shut it down, I guess.
Is there any, once we go out of public, or whatever, private session here, is there any action that we need to take, especially as it relates to this James guy?
I don't know. Can we just go ahead and continue to allow the attorney to pursue this, or do we have to? We don't have to have a motion.
I don't think we do.
No, it's best if we don't take any action in closed session, or we just come to some operational understanding.
I'm not suggesting. Thank you, Bob. I'm not suggesting we take any action at all. The action would be once we come out of closed session, and then we would make the motion as a board. So I'm just saying, in closed session here, though, we just keep moving forward. I think we're all in agreement. Bob, are you shaking your head? Yes, I'm pretty sure you are. It's up and down.
I am. I mean, I'm not sure I want to telegraph moves to Mr. James in our open when we go back into public session.
No.
Great.
I agree with that. Thank you. I'm good with that. So,
can I just read this really quick? This is the letter that Carrie's talking about. So, what is Deer Crest LLC?
It's that parcel.
That's to them. Says to, and this came from Paul. It says, to whom it may concern, this letter will serve as a confirmation that your property, identified as Landseer Lumber, is located within the service area provided by Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District. Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District intends to provide water and sewer services to your property when availability permits. We encourage you to monitor our efforts to increase sewer and water capacity. When our capacity grows beyond our current commitments, we can give you a firm commitment of sewer and water services at that time.
Yep.
Well, that would have been the previous owners, I think.
That's the previous owner.
No, that was actually Mike. He brought it in. There's also a letter attached to it because he had bought it, but this is when it was done to Deer Crest. I can't remember how Paul told me it happened, but it was actually Mike at the time. It was Deer Crest letterhead or something like that. This was before I started. I'm just going by what Paul told me.
But there's no stipulation about number of connections, right?
Mm-mm. It just says that we will service water to that lot.
So at the time,
could be a single, it could be whatever.
Well, at the time, there was only a single lot, and I think there was an existing commitment for one connection on that lot.
Yeah, and I think that's always been the authorization from the end.
So then I think Greg does have a valid claim, is that an additional 10 connections, that lot was never granted, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't jump in line ahead of our first right of refusal. Now, if we
except for the technicality about the single family versus condominium and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't say that they can subdivide it. They can't take a single family lot and subdivide it. So.
Yeah, I think that was probably where we were fine. It was under the development, under the single family homes, that you could have a number of single family homes. It didn't limit how many.
My impression from you guys is that's what you said.
Yeah, I think that's the way she read it, and she said, you can do it based on this, but,
No, there's still another letter out there that he brought to board meeting. I've got to find it.
No, it's an important topic, and unfortunately, it's going to bring some problems. I don't know how to deal with it. So. Okay.
All right. So let's say if that's the case, then I'll entertain a motion to come out of closed session back into public meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Got a motion?
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Point of just.